Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast, and our guests today are...
Hi, my name is Becky Spradford. I'm a Reader's Advisory Specialist. I specialize in serving patrons 13 and up. I am just outside Chicago, but I am from New Jersey, so I know your area well, born and bred there. I help readers all over the world with working with the library to help them match books. But I also am the Library World Horror Expert. I am the author of the Reader's Advisory Guide to Horror. The third edition is available for pre-order right now. And on my blogs, RA for All and RA for All Horror is a $5 off coupon right now for you to go pre-order it. I'm also though, and one of the reasons I'm here today is I am the secretary of the Horror Writers Association. And I am one of the co-founders and coordinators of our Summer Scares program.
And I am Conrad Stump. I am a local history associate at the Springfield Greene County Library in Springfield, Missouri, where I basically coordinate programming, work on community outreach. And so a lot of that entails working district-wide on different programming initiatives. And so one thing that we do is we plan an October horror series called Oh the Horror. But then on top of that, I'm also the programming consultant for the Summer Scares Initiative. Last year, we created the Summer Scares Programming Guide, which basically took each title and gave it read-alikes, advice for book talking, sample programs, and reading group guides. And we're doing that again this year. And so it's a really great, exciting initiative.
And Conrad actually got promoted also to being on the selection committee this year.
That's right. Awesome. It was super exciting.
Let's talk about how Summer Scares came about, and then we can get into the selection committee and all the other fun stuff.
Sure, yeah. So that was me. I was there. It has this awesome origin story, which was totally accidental, but it's super fun to talk about. Literally, it was born on the deck of the Queen Mary during StokerCon with myself, our liaison for the authors, J.G. Fardy, and then our first Summer Scares spokesperson, celebrity spokesperson, Grady Hendricks. So Grady, JG and I were sitting around on the decks, literally with the sun coming down on us, saying things like, you know, because Grady goes around to libraries, he's been to Conrad's library, he's really big on libraries. He's like, how can we get more libraries to read horror books? I know they like mine, they'd like lots of others. And we literally sat there and brainstormed for like 45 minutes. And one of the things we decided was, okay, what do we need to get libraries to read horror? One, we want to get them to give it to all ages because we want to make sure we're getting the readers and keeping them. We want to make sure that the titles we're picking, that a trusted group of library workers are suggesting them so that they're not quote unquote scared of the titles or worried. And so I said, that makes perfect sense. That's very similar. We were starting to try to do it like the Newbery Awards almost. So I said, well, so their schedule is, they pick the books in the winter, they announce them, and then they sort of go, and then in the summer, they do something where they, you know, have the banquet at the conference. And J.G. Fardy was like, wait, we can do that. We have StokerCon in the summer. And then that led to the whole Summer Scares, because in the summer, people have more time to read for fun. And, you know, horror works really well in the summer. That's when I started watching horror movies, was in the summer as a kid. And we were really drawn to libraries like Conrad's.
In 2017, our adult programming coordinator, Katie Hopkins, and I started Oh the Horror, which is basically kind of what it sounds like, an October horror programming series. And yes, we were super lucky to get Grady Hendricks. Quirkbooks was amazing to work with. He came out, we did three different events with him, and you know, well over 100 people showed up and really loved him. And then we also partnered with the local theater to show The Exorcist, which was super amazing. We had this guy from St. Louis come down to talk about the actual possession that inspired The Exorcist. we planned some different sort of like local programs and some fun programs. And, you know, I think to kind of what Becky was saying about librarians being scared of horror, I think a lot of times librarians aren't necessarily reading it, so they are afraid to suggest it to patrons, to connect them with books, or to plan programming around it, even though, you know, it's something that their patrons want. So that's kind of why I wanted to work with Summer Scares and put on, first of all, we put on a Summer Scares program series the first summer the initiative was going. And then, like I said, the following year, we created the programming guide, and really that was to help librarians feel more comfortable engaging their patrons with horror books and with horror programming, and to just feel more confident in planning those things themselves.
And that's the synergy with the library world. Without Conrad reaching out to me and Grady suggesting that I work with Conrad, you know, we wouldn't have even been able to find sort of like the first test library. So we did this Summer Scares. We had this connection with Grady already. He was going to Conrad's thing. We, you know, he had a connection with him. We figured it out as we went along. And since Conrad had the experience, we kind of had a trial by fire the first year. And then each year since, we've added something more for everyone.
Mm-hmm. So I think I mentioned very briefly before this interview that I was thrilled to see Summer Scares gaining so much traction. It is to promote horror. Now it's technically to promote horror all year round, correct?
Right. So we want people to read horror all year long, but we're using the whole idea of summer reading. There's already programming, and that adults and kids are reading more. You know, I was at an adult services department for 15 years, and we were one of the only libraries in our area back when I started that said, hey, adults, you should do summer reading and get prizes too. Now everyone does it. But we said, let's grab you, because if your kids see you reading, then they're going to read more, and let's all have a reason to come to the library. So yes, the idea was if we had something for the whole family, we could get in the summer, we'd have the most traction.
Yeah. And what's great about Summer Scares and summer reading together is usually summer reading has a theme, right? And as a librarian, you can kind of mold that theme to work with Summer Scares. So like, right, this year's theme is Tales and Tales, and there's so much there. And especially if you look at, you know, Fearsome Creatures of the Lumberwoods, you can do local folklore about different beasts in the area. Or it was something like Witchwood, you can do different sort of, you know, folklore or fairy tales or just myths and that kind of thing. So there's always something you can do if you just think a little more outside the box. You can make the Summer Scares sort of theme work for at least one of the Summer Scares titles.
You can even stretch it for the adults too, right? So like Frankenstein and Frankenstein Baghdad is about another well-known tale. And, you know, The Hunger is about a real life known tale, The Donner Party. Like you can make it, it is, he's absolutely right. Conrad's right. It is so nebulous that we can work to make it, to help you make it fit.
Yeah, and one of the things, especially with when we did Oh the Horror the first year, is so many of our programs were local history programs, because those tend to be some of the most popular programs, and there are always going to be, you know, local murders, local myths, local sort of, you know, urban legends or kind of spooky things. And so that's a way that you can kind of engage your community with horror, but also tie it to something that they're a little more familiar with, even if they're not horror fans.
So this is very exciting because, we have a sort of relationship with our local HWA chapter, and in doing some research for Summer Scares and on the note that you were talking about, I reached out to an author who I've worked with before, and there's going to be a presentation with local Long Island urban legends, of which there are many, including Long Island cryptids, which is super fun.
Wait, because, there are Long Island cryptids?
Oh my gosh.
There are, but just kind of getting back to it. So yeah, so for me, like summer and scary stories is huge. You know, you mentioned about things being for children and for being for adults. I was a very timid child, and I was first introduced to horror through Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. We used to go away for a summer, and, you know, a week we'd stay in a cabin with no running water or electricity in Lake George, New York. And my uncle would read Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, which is incredible and has an incredible history of being a challenged book, but it also has a folklore side to it, which is absolutely amazing. So not only is it scary, not only is it high interest, not only has it generated discussion of challenging, but it's also, it's got historical literary value, which is cool too. And even though I was afraid of the stories, I still craved them. And I think as I grew up, that feeling of like that stomach falling feeling, you don't get that through a lot of things, but horror was always sort of an alluring to me. And I think I really began reading horror fiction during the pandemic, just one right after another. I'd been a fan of it and I'd always pick up a horror book, but during the pandemic, it was like my comfort read.
So that's not uncommon. When times are terrible, readers gravitate to either things that make them feel better. So like romance and gentle reads were really popular. You know, think about the Hallmark Channel, right? Super popular. And then cozy mysteries. But then some people gravitate to reading things that are even worse than what's going on in their life. And so that's why we're seeing people like Grady Hendrix, Silvia Moreno Garcia, Stephen Graham Jones hitting the New York Times bestseller list for the first time, you know, in their careers. Look, they have been great writers for years, all three of them, but it is no, you know, small feat that they got to the bestseller list because of the pandemic, because people were starting to realize they liked horror. But I also think you brought up something that I really do want to talk about, and Conrad and I can talk about how we pick the books, because we understand that everybody comes to horror from a different place, right? So some people come as lifelong fans. Some people have never read it, but want to give it a try and want to dip their toe in. And some people, even if they're fans, not everyone wants to be scared in the same way. So we are extremely, extremely careful when we pick the books so that we make sure as we go through as a committee, and we say, hey, we have, you know, this many novels, these ones are scary, these ones are less scary. We have independent presses, large presses, we always have something that's graphic. We try to have stories, just so there are entry points all over the place. And again, adult, teen, and middle grade, but all of them, all nine titles every year, all nine titles are good for, you know, for adults to read, which I, Fearsome Creatures of the Lumberwoods, I have a crush on that book. The cover is glow in the dark, like it is fantastic. We also try to go out of our way to make sure that there are books that libraries already have, and that then also some that they're gonna need to buy. And we do require that the authors appear to promote Summer Scares and to libraries free of charge. Now that's virtual, and that was already what we had said, you know, we didn't require them to out of pocket travel. But last year we were able to obviously double down on that. But if Conrad, if you want to talk a little bit about how we actually battle royal it out to pick the book.
Yeah, that's something that I'm really curious about because there's just so much out there.
Yeah, it's super fun. So, you know, there are a few different people on the committee. And so we basically have this shared document and it's just this brain dump where we all put the books that we're really passionate about or that we think, you know, libraries and library patrons should be picking up. And so it's this huge list. And then we gradually start to sort of bring that down to a more nuanced list that we know is covering the different topics that we want to cover and hitting the marks we wanted to hit. And then, you know, after a few different meetings, we arrive sort of at our final three, and we have an alternate in case one of the authors isn't able to do it. But it's a lot of fun. And, you know, it's just a great discussion about horror. And it's nice to meet as a committee because especially in the library world, you don't often meet a lot of people who share your interest in horror. So it's nice to be part of this community that is so passionate about it and is also so passionate about getting it in the hands of more readers. So I love the process and I was so pleased that I was able to join in on it this year.
I do want to give a shout out to our sponsors because it also matters that because they have some of our subject experts. So the sponsors don't give us any money. They give us the time of their experts. So, you know, Conrad and I are general horror readers. Then we have Booklist magazine. We have one of their middle grade horror experts, one of the editors, Julia Smith. And then she's our middle grade expert. And then for Book Riot is one of our other sponsors. And Kelly Jensen is a teen horror expert. So we let them sort of drive that conversation the most. And we look to them for advice. But we do have a moment where like we winnow it down a little bit. And then we share like our thoughts about the books. And I mm-hmm. always say, I warned Conrad this year, like, you got to come to bat for the titles you want. Like everyone's on the screen and they get their chance to shout out. And then our other sponsors are obviously the Horror Writers Association and then United for Libraries, which is all about connecting libraries and authors. But the other key thing we have each year is, I mean, we added Conrad this year and we did change the middle grade expert, but it's that spokesperson. We always have a celebrity spokesperson, which if you're looking to do something to promote reading, I just think is a good idea. So Grady did it the first year and it's totally volunteer. And that person brings their own unique style and connections with authors and the things they like. And you can see it in the books that are reflected. And then we picked the first year, one of our adult books was Mongrels by Stephen Graham Jones. So we asked him to be our spokesperson for the second year. And again, we saw his influence. And then this year, we picked Sylvia Moreno Garcia, and she's already a guest of honor at StokerCon. So that worked out really well. Her and I were supposed to have done something live at ALA in 2020, and it didn't happen. So instead, I put her on Summer Scares, which was great. But I think her participation, she's the first person we've had that knew nothing, like that wasn't intimately involved with the program, right? Because Stephen had been part of it, Grady had helped found it. And she brought so much to the conversation. First of all, she is so smart about books, about reading. And then, you know, she helped us. We're highlighting, you know, The Marrow Thieves is by a Indigenous Canadian author. We tried to have another Canadian author, but the book was just too hard to get, you know, and just her passion and her knowledge. I don't know if it was Conrad or another committee member, but I straight up said, it might've been Carolyn Chesla, who I haven't mentioned. She's our academic expert too. She runs our Twitter too. So I think I told her, I said, I don't know who's gonna follow Sylvia. Like, we've gotta think long and hard because she was so good.
Yeah, she was really great. And I mean, all the suggestions that she had were wonderful. And I was, you know, they were so impressive. And I was really surprised by how, you know, we all kind of thought, oh yeah, this is a great choice. And really the titles came together pretty easily. We really agreed on a lot of them. And you know, one that I want to mention that Sylvia brought up was The Cipher by Kathy Kojo, which is this classic horror novel that has been, you know, re-released. And it's like, oh yeah, I mean, I would not have even thought of that, but it's such a good choice. And I'm super excited for more people to, you know, become familiar with Kathy Kojo's work. And I'm really excited for people to see the programming page that goes along with it, because I feel like there are some really good programs for the book and just, you know, read-alikes where you might not see it because it's not as current of a book, right? But there are some really great read-alikes for it.
The book that brings up a good point about how we pick the books too that I didn't mention. We say the books can't be older than 10 years old. However, The Cipher, because we made the rules. Sylvia had a great point. The Cipher won Best Debut Novel years ago when it first came out. It is like the origin of modern body horror, which is so popular right now. And Kathy's also a performance artist, so she's just a fascinating person. And because it was reissued this year, 2020, we said, oh, we can do it. Now, normally the book has to be at least 2 years old for us to consider it. But in this case, it's a backlist title with a new edition. And we were like, this is the perfect year to highlight it. Our, you know, it's a classic, it's newly reissued. And our spokesperson was really going to bat for it. So that's like, you know, there are rules, but we're just trying to make sure we highlight books that are worth getting into public libraries.
So how is horror defined? There's so many people out there, especially librarians, who are afraid of touching it or afraid of recommending it, especially to younger audiences. And you mentioned body horror, and I'm glad you did, because there are so many different types of horror. Body horror is very popular now, as is folk horror. Very, very big. But how is horror defined? Like, what are your parameters?
So that's a great question, because, you know, in writing my book, I have to write a definition of horror. So here is the definition of horror that I have in my book. And then we're going to talk about how we broaden that out for this. So horror is a story in which the author manipulates the reader's emotion by introducing situations in which unexplainable phenomenon and unearthly creatures threaten the protagonist and provoke terror in the reader. So that's like the very academic definition. But Sylvia actually brought this up. And if you want to put it in the show notes, we did with Booklist, we did their podcast, Shelf Care, back in February. And Sylvia talks about this at length. Conrad's also on there talking about a library he worked with. But Sylvia and I talked about it, and she brings up a good point in that we're trying to get those emotions of discomfort, unease, you know, fear, and there's different ways to do it. So I did already mention The Marrow Thieves. That book is dystopian science fiction, but it's very supernatural. It's it has to do with, I don't want to give a lot away, but it has to basically do with dreams, and the terror comes out of that. So it definitely is almost always categorized as post-apocalyptic or dystopian or something like that, but it's really about the feelings of horror. We go out of our way to sort of broaden that view very much. Like, we always have a funny book, right? So like The Undead Girl Gang is humorous. We always make sure to have that. And I mean, The Fearsome Creatures of the Lumber Woods has a lot of humor in it too, but it also has folk horror. So
yeah, to me, like, horror and comedy, I know that's like horror and humor, they go so well together because they're both very physical. I was, back in the day when I did film theory, I remember my professor taught us the intro to film theory with only horror films. And he did a few lessons on how horror and comedy or slapstick comedy both are physical and are sort of mirrors of each other, because they both evoke that feeling to cover your eyes or to gasp, or, you know, they get your heart racing. And I know I personally, especially with zombie horror, it needs to have some humor in it. You know, I know everybody's different, but for me, like Shaun of the Dead, I personally can't have my zombies too serious. I know there's many people who like their zombies serious, but for me, there needs to be a little humor in it.
So I think Conrad captures a lot of that with all his different programming ideas.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of is how you want to interpret it. And I think that it includes, right, anything that really would scare you, whether that is a supernatural thing, whether it is a sort of real world kind of thing. I mean, that might fall a little bit more into like thriller, but it's all sort of under the horror umbrella, in my opinion. And, you know, it has elements of fantasy, elements of sci-fi. So it's really sort of a large umbrella in my mind. But so with the programming, I try to cover a few different things, right? And different ways that people can enjoy horror. So either if you want to have sort of an academic look at it, we kind of mix academic and pop culture in different programs. Like I said, we mix local history, whether that's folklore, ghosts, whatever, murders, whatever it may be. And then sort of more fun things, right? Where you could do crafts, you know, different sort of make and takes, and just sort of things where you're enjoying it, but you're not necessarily experiencing something that is scaring you. I think that there's a lot of fun, sort of, you think about Halloween and all the fun stuff about Halloween that you can really enjoy year round if you just allow yourself to.
So have you gotten many librarians who were reluctant to come over to your side and advocate for horror?
I will tell you, at first we had some that were reluctant. Now we're like, people are just constantly on top of us from the day we announced the new spokesperson on Halloween. Like, when can we have stuff? When do you have a list? What are you doing? I mean, Conrad, do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, definitely. This year I've 100% noticed a huge increase in the number of librarians that have reached out who want to plan programming, whether it's just displays, whether it's book discussion groups or whether it's actual, virtual or potentially in-person programming. And so there's been a heightened interest, and I'm sure that has a lot to do with the pandemic, but I also am glad that we're in our third year. And so people are becoming more familiar with the Summer Scares Initiative. I think, they're trusting it more, and more librarians who, like horror, like myself, feel more comfortable sort of coming out of the woodwork and expressing themselves to their other librarian friends who might not like it as much. Because I think that there are a lot of horror fans out there. You just might not always run into them. And so you're not used to talking about it. But I think, things like Summer Scares, things like the real life horror of the pandemic make people feel more comfortable just expressing their love of horror.
And because we've normalized it and we've gone out of our way to make it very official, right? We have subject experts. We have people who, like Conrad, who have done programming for years. We have people who've written books. We've had people who, this is their thing. We're trusted people in the community, and so it's definitely made it more comfortable for libraries to say to their supervisors, hey, look at this panel of experts. Look at this. We have book list. We have Library Journal the year before. We have Book Riot. We have people that matter. We have libraries supporting it. Conrad's library sponsors the programming guide, the Springfield Greene County Library in Missouri. Like, this is part of their work. This is something they publish to the world. Like, this is not just Conrad and Becky in their basements making a zine, right? It helps, though, a lot to legitimize it. I mean, it stinks that horror has this, like, lower status. I mean, we could talk about that in a whole nother podcast, right, about genre levels. But we knew that going in, because we were fans and we used it to our advantage with our expertise. And, library workers know that if the sources are good, they're going to do it. And the word of mouth is great. In fact, every year at StokerCon, we do Librarians Day. Normally, and Conrad's been there in person before, mm-hmm. Normally it's a separate ticket with StokerCon for $75. But this year it's $75 and you get into all of StokerCon. And it's on May 21st for the whole day. Conrad and I are hosting it. That's and right. The full information is on my blog right now. And every year Conrad is either on or hosts a panel that is about programming for horror in libraries. So, we have groups, including a library, a very teeny tiny library in Upper Peninsula, Michigan, who went crazy for Summer Scares last year. And Conrad can tell you about it. But the fact is, we're highlighting large scale things like Storyfest, which isn't far from you, in Connecticut, and small things like Crystal Falls Public Library and everything in between. But the whole day is for library workers, so they aren't scared. And we have Sylvia Marina Garcia and we have Grady Hendricks, and everybody's there.
That's right. Yeah, there's this really wonderful woman named Evelyn who, took the Summer Scares programming guide during this pandemic when we were so closed off from everyone. And she found a ton of ways to engage with her community with it. They held multiple book discussions. They had author events. They did a ton of the crafts. And she was so nice. And she sent us a ton of really great anecdotes and pictures. But it was so meaningful to me just because not only did she find something, a way to put the programming guide into action, but she did it at such a time when her community really needed it. And it kind of made that impact in the community and, could help librarians sort of realize ways that they can connect even when they are socially distanced. So I was extremely pleased to hear from her.
Yeah, and we invited her to StokerCon to share because a lot of times, we get things from people like, oh, well, that's a big library. We can't do that. And I mean, they are literally the teeniest of teeny. And she is so thankful that we put the work in. She's like, you gave me the guide. I can make it happen. And I think that that's important for us to remember. You can talk to the authors, you can read the books, but just use it, even if you just do the programs. And that was one thing that the pandemic helped us with. We hadn't made the jump to making anything virtual other than some virtual appearances by the authors. So last year, we were sort of forced to, out of nowhere, get some video materials on the Horror Writers Association's YouTube page. So I made a playlist for Summer Scares. And it features me talking about the program, Conrad talking about the guide. And then literally we all were flying by the seat of our pants in May during a pandemic. And we got as many of the authors as we could to record videos introducing themselves to Library World and made a playlist of that. And those are still available and you can still use those and show them to your libraries with last year's titles. This year, we have a little more planning time. So we are recording panels that will be on the YouTube page like this, you know, like there'll be audio and video with the authors. So I am going to be hosting the YA authors, Conrad's hosting the adults, and Julia, as we mentioned, was hosting the middle grade. And we're going to debut those videos at StokerCon Librarians Day, but they're not going to be behind a paywall. Literally the day StokerCon ends, they will become listed on YouTube in the Summer Scares playlist. And you can use those and show them to your patrons, you know, as a program. They'll be about an hour each and it'll be a round table with the authors. And the neat thing is if your patrons want to follow up, all of those authors are willing to be available to follow up.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that, you know, I wanted to point out about the sort of positive side of what's come out of the pandemic is that it has opened up programming for those smaller libraries where the world is really your oyster and you can connect with people all over the place for whatever you're trying to do. So like for the Diviners, I have a program suggestion that is basically a macabre museum meet and greet, which is saying, you know, partner with a macabre museum anywhere in the country because there are tons of them and have them sort of tell you about their mission and what they do, some of their items that they have and sort of a, you know, behind the scenes look at the process of acquisitions and, you know, just getting things into the collection. And so that's kind of a really great thing that no matter how small your library is, the pandemic has really opened up possibilities and, you know, all the crafts and all the sort of make and take ideas, they don't require a huge budget because even if you're from a larger library, your budget is probably not that big because library budgets for programming are just small. And so, you know, it's really as narrow as you, it's as broad as you want to make it, right? So the only person kind of narrowing your options, I think a lot of times is yourself. So hopefully the pandemic has made people realize that there is more available to them and they're capable of doing more programming despite the size of their library.
How did you both get into horror?
My mother told me not to, so I did. No. I mean, I also was super interested in scary stories to tell in the dark. I mean, I grew up on Goosebumps. I loved Fear Street and I was just, you know, always attracted to it. And it's not something that I, you know, you can really explain. It's just, I gravitated towards it, but those were sort of my first forays into it. And of course, yes, my mother was so great because she didn't like that I wanted to watch the scary movies that we got at Blockbuster, but she let me rent the scary movies. So, I really credit her for allowing me to engage with things that I wanted to, which is so important, especially for kids. And something that we hope the Summer Scares Initiative does is it, you know, lets parents allow their kids to read what they want to read.
And mine was a little more, I had to realize it was horror that I loved. I, looking back, always liked things that were slightly askew and weird. So like, you know, working in libraries, you're always asked during like Children's Book Week, who was your favorite children's author as a kid? And even though I worked in the adult, I participated. And it was Shel Silverstein, and it wasn't even close. Like, I love Shel Silverstein. I liked the most macabre poems the most. Like, you know, when the girl who won't take out the garbage gets totally covered in garbage. Like, that was my favorite one. It's really dark. But as a kid, my parents were very much about, you can read whatever you want. We went to the library a lot. I mean, I got left at the library to take as long as I wanted. Growing up, I grew up in New Jersey. So of course this story involves a mall. We had this small mall in my town and every Wednesday night after Hebrew school, my dad would pick me up because I was the oldest. So everyone else was at home and we'd stop at the mall and we would go to the record store and the bookstore because those were his big things. And that was the day of cassette singles, right? And I babysat, so I would buy cassette singles, but he would always let me get a book, not every week, but if I wanted a book. And I found the occult section. And I didn't know what that meant, but man, he let me buy a whole bunch of V.C. Andrews books. And I read all of those. And as I'm learning, you know, I'm in my mid-40s, women my age, we tend to have our entry through those V.C. Andrews books, which I thought I was the only one that did that, right? Of course not. I mean, they're still coming out and she's been dead forever. So I don't know, though, if I wasn't the oldest and I, you know, we didn't have this little time together because I had two other younger sisters after Hebrew school. It was just the two of us. Who knows if I would have done that? So I never remember how old I was. I was like, well, I had to be younger than 13 because I was in Hebrew school. So we're talking like 11 and 12 reading V.C. Andrews, but I loved them. My father was also a huge Stephen King fan. I mean, he literally, the summer that The Stand Unabridged came out, 1500 pages, we had a house in the Poconos and he would visit on weekends. He literally brought it to the beach every day. Like, you know, who brings a 1500 page book to the beach? But it was Stephen King. So it was always around and I was never discouraged. And then movies too. I grew up in the summers when, you know, in the mid 80s when the slasher movies were awesome and numerous. And for me, my favorites were actually not Halloween or Friday the 13th. I was a Nightmare on Elm Street girl. And I think it was the dream part because it was just so, you know, also I think Nightmare on Elm Street looking back was way more supernatural too, because it did have that supernatural element and I'm drawn to that more. And so I'm a Nightmare on Elm Street girl and I always will be. And those were lots of my days, rainy days in the Poconos in the summer.
I could see that. And also like while Michael Myers and Jason Voorhees, they're very silent, Freddy always has a quip.
He does.
I have to give a shout out also for myself, for my young self, to obviously Goosebumps, but I was a little older for the demographic, but Are You Afraid of the Dark? Which DJ McHale, by the way, is the most amazing person. My books were Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. And also that really short Alvin Schwartz book.
Yes. In a dark room. Yeah.
With the story of Danny the Green Ribbon. And uh-huh. There was another author who did a riff on it recently.
Carmen Maria Machado.
Yes. The Husband Stitch, and it's a riff on the Green Ribbon, and it is brilliant in so many ways. But that book scared me so much. I was afraid my head was going to fall off the longest time.
Same.
And I have a good friend who also works at a library who has cosplayed at Comic-Con as Jenny with the Green Ribbon.
Oh my God.
It's a brilliant costume.
My husband likes to crack his neck and I hate it because I think of that story every time. I'm like, your head's going to fall off. And he's like, why are you saying that?
But also, so Are You Afraid of the Dark? It was like pretty dark for kids, but not really, because I think, you know, as you've mentioned, horror is really good for kids. The Twilight Zone.
Oh, I loved the Twilight Zone.
The Twilight Zone runs the gamut of almost all kind of horror. And you know, there are some episodes that may not be as good as others, and there are some that are definitely of that time. But for the most part, they hold up very, very well. And some of them have fantasy aspects, some of them have a folk aspect, some of them are just weird. And you kind of are left feeling uncomfortable, but you're not exactly sure why. So the Twilight Zone is like my baby. And then of course, when I was in high school, I ended up becoming obsessed with Dark Shadows for a summer. So the six books and the six authors, just so people know, and also just how they can all reach out to you, librarians, or listeners who wanna find Summer Scares programming, how could they find that as well?
So I'm gonna let Conrad list all the books because he's got the guide, but I just wanna do a shout out for the guide while he's getting that information ready. That guide will be ready by the week of, but no later than the 15th of April. And we will provide you with a link because it is totally free, the PDF. We will provide you with a link to give to people.
Yeah, that's right. So the three titles in our adult section are The Hunger by Alma Katsu, The Cipher by Kathy Koja, Frankenstein in Baghdad by Ahmed Sadawi. The three in our young adult section are The Marrow Thieves by Sherry Dimeline, The Diviners by Libba Bray, and Undead Girl Gang by Lily Anderson. And then the three middle grade titles are Witchwood by Tahira Mafi, Fearsome Creatures of the Lumberwoods by Hal Johnson, and Ollie's Odyssey by William Joyce.
And I just want to make a statement that we do make sure to audit our selections and that we make sure that there are diverse offerings to represent all people. And we never have fewer than 30% representation. We always make sure that there are at least 50% women, although I think we have more than 50% women authors this time around. And, you know, just so if you're like, well, what are those books about? You know, Conrad's Guide, which you can link to when you listen to this, not only, as he said, not only has plot summaries, but programming ideas, book discussion guides, just so much programming ideas. Like, there's just so much information on each title that you can feel comfortable, even if you're too scared to read the books, to recommend them with confidence to people. You know, we have our information on there, so you know that it's a vetted guide by experts. And we, you know, Conrad's team writes the information in a very conversational way. So literally, I've had library workers say to me, like, I'm too scared to read it, but I just read what was in there, and I sounded like I knew about the book, and the patron loved it. That's fine. Please do that. That's what we're there to do and to help.
Yep. That's the key to reading like a librarian. You don't have to read all the books. You just have to read about the books. And what's great about, you know, even if you are scared to sort of engage with it, we have in the guide a list of all the books that you can print out and put on display. So no matter what section you're working with, whether, you know, you're in adult section, the teen section, or the children section, you can create a display out of the three titles and out of basically the 12 read-alikes that are in each section. So each book has 4 read-alikes. So that gives you kind of 15 titles total in a reading level that you can just make a display out of. And then, you know, you can just read about the books.
And I actually am providing Jessica with the link to the Summer Scares. It's a FAQ and resource page, and it has all of this year's information and links, including when we do, when we have our official podcast partner, the Ladies of the Fright, are going to do a podcast about the books. We'll have those there, but also it has a link to the archives. So don't forget, we have 2 other years, right? So you can, what is that, 36 books now, because we have, you know, 9 each year for 3 years, and you can use those and make displays with those and have more titles and 2 years of the reading of the program guide. So you can have more reader likes and more. That's a huge display you can keep up all summer long.
That's right.
Well, I want to thank you both. This has been really, really cool. And we're very excited to hear about this. And your passion just shines through. It's awesome. This has been Jessica with Syosset Library. Our guests today were
Becky Spradford
and Conrad Stump.
And we are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.